This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Man Alive by G.K. Chesterton. Section 12, Part 1, The Enigmas of Innocent Smith. Chapter 5, The Allegorical Practical Joker. Part 4. "I want the rest to go in," said Michael, in a clear voice, "because I want the whole of this garden in which to talk to you." There was an atmosphere of irrational doubt. It was really getting colder, and a night wind had begun to wave one or two trees in the twilight. Dr. Warner, however, spoke in a voice devoid of indecision. "I refuse to listen to any such proposal," he said. "You have lost this ruffian, and I must find him." "I don't ask you to listen to any proposal," answered Moon quietly. "I only ask you to listen." He made a silencing movement with his hand, and immediately the whistling noise that had been lost in the dark streets on one side of the house could be heard from quite a new quarter on the other side. Through the night maze of streets the noise increased with incredible rapidity, and the next moment the flying hoofs and flashing wheels had swept up to the blue railed gate at which they had originally stood. Mr. Smith got down from his perch with an air of absent-mindedness, and coming back into the garden, stood in the same elephantine attitude as before. "Get inside, get inside," cried Moon hilariously, with the air of one shooing a company of cats. "Come, come, be quick about it. Didn't I tell you I wanted to talk to Inglewood?" How they were all really driven into that house again, it would have been difficult afterwards to say. They had reached the point of being exhausted with incongruities, as people at a farce are ill with laughing, and the brisk growth of the storm among the trees seemed like a final gesture of things in general. Inglewood lingered behind them, saying with certain amicable exasperation, "I say, do you really want to speak to me?" "I do," said Michael, "very much." Night had come, as it generally does, quicker than the twilight had seemed to promise. While the human eye still felt the sky as light gray, a very large and lustrous moon, appearing abruptly above a bulk of roofs and trees, proved by contrast that the sky was already a very dark gray indeed. A drift of barren leaves across the lawn, a drift of riven clouds across the sky, seemed to be lifted on the same strong and yet laborious wind. "Arthur," said Michael, "I began with an intuition, but now I am sure. You and I are going to defend this friend of yours before the blessed court of Beacon, and to clear him, too, clear him of both crime and lunacy. Just listen to me while I preach to you for a bit." They walked up and down the darkening garden together, as Michael Moon went on. "Can you," asked Michael Moon, "shut your eyes and see some of those queer old hieroglyphics they stuck up on white walls in the old hot countries? How stiff they were in shape, and yet how gaudy in color. Think of some alphabet of arbitrary figures, picked out in black and red and white and green, with some old Semitic crowd of nosy ghouls' ancestors staring at it, and try to think why the people put it up at all." Inglewood's first instinct was to think that his perplexing friend had really gone off his head at last. There seemed so reckless a flight of irrelevancy from the tropic pictured walls he was asking to imagine to the gray, windswept, and somewhat chilly suburban garden in which he was actually kicking his heels. How he could be more happy in one by imagining the other he could not conceive, both in themselves were unpleasant. "Why does everybody repeat riddles?" went on Moon abruptly, "even if they've forgotten the answers. Riddles are easy to remember because they are hard to guess. So were those stiff old symbols in black, red, or green easy to remember because they had been hard to guess. Their colors were plain, their shapes were plain, everything was plain except the meaning." Inglewood was about to open his mouth in an amiable protest, but Moon went on, plunging quicker and quicker up and down the garden and smoking faster and faster. "Dances, too," he said. "Dances were not frivolous. Dances were harder to understand than inscriptions and texts. The old dances were stiff, ceremonial, highly colored, but silent. "Have you noticed anything odd about Smith?" "Well, really," cried Inglewood, left behind in a collapse of humour, "have I noticed anything else?" "Have you noticed this about him?" asked Moon, with unshaken persistency, "that he has done so much and said so little? When first he came he talked, but in a gasping, irregular sort of way, as if he wasn't used to it. All he really did was actions, painting red flowers on black gowns or throwing yellow bags onto the grass. I tell you that big green figure is figurative, like any green figure capering on some white eastern wall." "My dear Michael," cried Inglewood, in rising irritation, which increased with the rising wind, "you are getting absurdly fanciful." "I think of what has just happened," said Michael steadily. "The man has not spoken for hours, and yet he has been speaking all the time. He fired 3 shots from a 6-shooter, and then gave it up to us, when he might have shot us dead in our boots. How could he express his trust in us better than that? He wanted to be tried by us. How could he have shown it better than by standing quite still and letting us discuss it? He wanted to show that he stood there willingly and could escape if he liked. How could he have shown it better than by escaping in the cab and coming back again? Innocent Smith is not a madman. He is a ritualist. He wants to express himself not with his tongue but with his arms and legs. With my body, I thee worship, as it says in the marriage service. I begin to understand the old plays and pageants. I see why the mutes at a funeral were mute. I see why the mummers were mum. They meant something, and Smith means something too. All other jokes have to be noisy, like Little Nosy Gould's jokes, for instance. The only silent jokes are the practical jokes. Poor Smith, properly considered, is an allegorical, practical joker. What he has really done in this house has been as frantic as a war dance, but as silent as a picture." "I suppose you mean," said the other dubiously, "that we have got to find out what all these crimes meant, as if they were so many colored picture puzzles. But even supposing that they do mean something, why, Lord bless my soul." Taking the turn of the garden quite naturally, he had lifted his eyes to the moon, by this time risen big and luminous, and had seen a huge, half-human figure sitting on the garden wall. It was outlined so sharply against the moon that for the first flash it was hard to be certain even that it was human. The hunched shoulders and outstanding hair had rather the air of a colossal cat. It resembled a cat also in the fact that when first startled, it sprang up and ran with easy activity along the top of the wall. As it ran, however, its heavy shoulders and small stooping head rather suggested a baboon. The instant it came within reach of a tree, it made an ape-like leap and was lost in the branches. The gale, which by this time was shaking every shrub in the garden, made the identification yet more difficult, since it melted the moving limbs of the fugitive in the multitudinous moving limbs of the tree. "Who is there?" shouted Arthur. "Who are you? Are you innocent?" "Not quite," answered an obscure voice among the leaves. "I cheated you once about a penknife." The wind in the garden had gathered strength and was throwing the tree backwards and forwards with the man in the thick of it, just as it had on the gay and golden afternoon when he had first arrived. "But are you Smith?" asked Inglewood, as in an agony. "Very nearly," said the voice out of the tossing tree. "But you must have some real name," shrieked Inglewood in despair. "You must call yourself something." "Call myself something," thundered the obscure voice, shaking the tree so that all its 10,000 leaves seemed to be talking at once. "I call myself Roland, Oliver, Isaiah, Charlemagne, Arthur, Hildebrand, Homer, Danton, Michelangelo, Shakespeare, Breakspeare." "But man alive," cried Inglewood in exasperation. "That's right, that's right," came with a roar out of the rocking tree. "That's my real name." And he broke a branch, and one or two autumn leaves fluttered away across the moon. End of chapter 5, end of part 1, end of section 12.